why it's essential for life, where it comes from, how we protect it, and the water resources that we have in North Idaho and around the world. We'll give you some facts and statistics based on science and other recognized sources.
Today, the first week in this series is focused on what is water, why is it essential for life, and where it comes from, and how it gets from a source in nature to your kitchen faucet here in the city of Sandpoint. What is that source in nature, and what does it take to provide clean, drinkable products to the Sandpoint citizens?
In preparation, Susie and I recorded two interviews this week. The first one is with local healthcare provider Nicole Grimm. She's a certified family nurse practitioner in Sandpoint. And our second interview is with Amanda Wilson, who's the director of the City of Sandpoint Public Works Department, and her coworker Jeff Cowley, who is the city wastewater superintendent. Before we get to those discussions, though, a bit of background and some facts. We like facts.
Yes, we do. And Jean, did you know water is a transparent, tasteless, odorless, and nearly colorless chemical substance that is the main constituent of Earth's streams, lakes, and oceans, and the fluids of most living organisms, and that is vital to all known forms of life, even though it provides no calories or organic nutrients.
And Susie, did you know that while it takes about 12 gallons per day to sustain a human being, the average American uses about 158 gallons a day?
That's amazing. Also, one-third of the global population, that's 2 billion people, live under conditions of severe water scarcity at least 1 month of the year, and 500 million people in the world face severe water scarcity all year round. 780 million people live without clean drinking water.
Which makes me appreciate even more this statistic, which it says, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, Bonner County has 1,919 square miles, and of that, 185 square miles is water, which is 9.6% of our county. Some of this information will be discussed in our upcoming interviews.
Let's get to our first interview with local healthcare practitioner Nicole Grimm. Again, these interviews were recorded earlier this week. You are a board-certified family nurse practitioner here in Sandpoint and a volunteer provider and board member at Partners for Care, which is a free healthcare clinic here in our community. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Susie. I'm excited to be here.
We want to start with a medical person to get a sense of the need of the human body for good, clean drinking water and some basic information about water in general. So as a starting point, a pretty elementary question, what is water and why is it essential for life?
A great place to start. So water is, by simple definition, H2O, two hydrogen molecules to one oxygen. And water is essential to life. It covers over 70% of our Earth's surface. It actually comprises over 60% of the human body. So at birth, an infant is born with 78% water content. And as we age, that decreases. Shockingly enough, even our bones have water. Our bones are estimated to be 30% water. But there's several chemical properties that makes water just indispensable for human life. One of them is that water can nearly dissolve everything. So the fact that it can also exist in three states, so it can exist as a gas, a liquid, and a solid, all within a very small range of temperatures. And without clean water, it's fair to say there would be no human life or animal life or plant life on Earth. like you know, the human body is made up of water, and our human cells are primarily made up of water. And this is essential because it allows our body to filter toxins. It allows energy transfer in between of our cells, and it allows our cells to use nutrients and vitamins and chemicals. And there's also something interesting about water with its surface tension, because that allows osmosis to occur in between of our cells.
And osmosis is kind of that transfer through a membrane of those substances, and water facilitates that.
Right. And just the surface tension and characteristics of water in of itself allow that to happen.
And you said something that I hadn't thought of before, but we have to have water in our air too, don't we? I mean, if we didn't have any humidity in our air, we wouldn't be in good shape.
Right. And if you think about the human body, we are losing water as we breathe, as we excrete, as we urinate. We're sweating, we're losing water. And this is where we always need clean access to water. People always say and ask, well, how much water should I exactly be drinking? And it was this age-old wives' tale that said, 8 glasses a day is good for you. And although we don't really know how much water a human body should drink, it's probably on the lines of 2 to 3 liters, 3 liters for a man, 2.5 liters-ish for a woman, but just enough that our body, our cells stay hydrated to really provide the essential functions. Water by sweating helps regulate our body temperature, maintains our sweat and our respiration. Carbohydrates in our bodies and our protein are metabolized. They're transported with water. Water in our body also helps flush out wastes, and it helps with the filtration, mainly through urination. It makes saliva. It lubricates the joints in our joints. It helps maintain just an overall balance of fluids. It also helps minimize our caloric intake. If we drink a glass of water, we substitute water for sugary drinks, we have less hunger, and helps us lose weight. It also helps energize our muscles. You remember that when we lose even 20% of our water and become dehydrated, we lose 50% of our energy in our muscles. So this is where it's really important for an athlete to keep hydrated, because it keeps our muscles strong. Because the cells that don't maintain this balance of their electrolytes and fluids causes those cells to essentially shrink and shrivel, causing our muscles to be fatigued and we run out of energy.
You mentioned electrolytes, and basic water from the tap doesn't necessarily have those electrolytes in it, or does it?
Maybe has some. I can't speak to our local drinking water, but typically there is other solvents that are dissolved in there. There's sometimes natural salts in the water. There could be, certainly like in a distilled water, they do remove all of that. But in our tap water, there's probably a variety of.
And by drinking water, you're also kind of bringing those salts that are naturally in the body into the system. You didn't mention how blood needs water also, or circulation or the vascular system.
Absolutely. So it maintains our blood pressure. If we were to be really dehydrated and didn't drink enough fluid, there's less volume circulating. And obviously, without circulation, and we'd have vascular compromise and wouldn't be able to maintain thought process. Our brain wouldn't get blood.
And ultimately, you could die, right? I mean,
correct.
If you don't have enough
correct.
Water and you get dehydrated, it impacts a lot of functions. And
absolutely.
So how long can you go without drinking water, do you think?
I've always heard 3 days.
3 days.
However, I'm sure it depends on a lot of extra.
But it's way less than you can go without eating.
Correct. You can go weeks without eating. And water, we need an input of water, just because, remember, as we even breathe, we are losing water.
So we're talking about water and its purity in its pure form. We're talking about fresh, drinkable water. And some water has bacteria in it and chemicals. Some of this is okay. What isn't and what is?
So, Susie, the World Health Organization states that safe water is really water that does not represent a risk to health over the lifetime of consumption, including the different ages in our life that we may be more susceptible to contaminants. water can be contaminated in several ways. You mentioned bacteria, microorganisms like parasites, bacteria can get into the human, or get into water. Typically, this is through fecal matter. Water can also be contaminated from industrial waste and agricultural waste from spraying crops. Many nitrates that are used in fertilizers can enter the water off of runoff of fields. And there's also a variety of heavy metal contaminants that can be found in water, such as lead and mercury. Sometimes those are from natural deposits in the ground, and other times they're from improper disposal of household substances.
So there's some, maybe there's some level that's acceptable, some bacteria is acceptable, but others aren't?
Correct. And the EPA sets those guidelines for safe drinking water, and municipalities will adhere to those set standards to benefit the public health.
And we have other speakers who are going to tell us more about that, too. But I like the idea that it isn't that we're drinking something that's absolutely pure. It just has to not have been exposed to undue amount of fecal matter and chemicals.
Right.
What are some of the things that can happen from those bad bacteria?
So locally in North Idaho, things that you've probably heard of are Giardia, maybe Cryptosporidium, and those typically cause a lot of gastroenteritis and a lot of just GI upset. Typically, it looks like vomiting, diarrhea. You become dehydrated from just loss of significant amounts of body fluid. Often there's fevers, abdominal pain, abdominal cramping.
So pretty serious.
Yes.
Yes. And Giardia can be really hard to get rid of, can it?
It can be chronic. It's typically treated with just a simple antibiotic, but not always is it susceptible to the antibiotics that we choose. But it's a fairly profound illness.
So you kind of mentioned how this might come about, but how prevalent is that potential here in our area?
Well, Susie, with the recreationalists and outdoor activities that we all enjoy, there are a lot of people out hiking, and maybe their filter on their water bottle isn't great. Maybe they just stop to a stream and grab some water. It's actually more prevalent than you would expect. I probably see it clinically several times a year. And this is where it's just important to always travel with a filter in our water bottle and be mindful that we need to drink clean water, and there are ramifications if we're exposed to parasites from or bacteria in the water.
So municipal water is highly regulated, but we have a lot of private wells and private water systems in our area in North Idaho. Can some of these wells get contaminated?
You bet. So that often happens too. Sometimes it happens in times of flooding where there's a lot of extra water pouring into the well. And often it happens because the wells are shallow and homeowners maybe don't test the drinking water. So it certainly can happen on a number of platforms, and wells certainly are one of them.
And I think from this series, I'm going to find out how often a well should be tested, because I drink well water. And I had it tested when we moved in, but I don't think about it after that.
Well, let's look a little bit further far from our own little area. Water is everywhere on the planet, but as we've heard from our facts and statistics earlier, a very small percentage of water on the planet is suitable for human consumption. What do people around the globe do when suitable water is not available? How do they survive? And I know, Nicole, you've spent some time in sub-Sahara Africa and have seen firsthand how a scarcity of fresh water resources contributes to major health problems and even death for citizens and especially children. So can we talk a little bit about this and what life is like when water resources are scarce?
It's such a profound realization when you realize what privilege we have to drink clean water. And when you see those around the world who do not have access to clean water, and the death and the cycle of poverty that stems from that is really, it's profoundly tragic to me. So Susie, 650 million people are estimated in the world to not have access to clean water. a lot more than that, over 2 million, probably don't have access to a toilet and good sanitation, which goes hand in hand with clean water, is to clean ourselves. And that health crisis alone caused from lack of clean water, it's estimated over 300,000 children lose their life in a year due to lack of clean water. Especially children who are under the age of 5, their immune systems are not as mature as ours, and so they can't handle dehydration or the impact of a diarrheal illness.
Because we're not real familiar with some of those diseases in our country, mm-hmm. but it's like cholera and what are other...
Malaria typhoid.
Mm-hmm.
Are big waterborne illnesses. And I think we often think, and we don't think of the profound effect that that lack of water actually has on people. It certainly affects women, I believe, disproportionately, because women are typically the ones who are going to find the clean water. And often the clean water sources are hours away, and they're doing heavy lifting and walking for miles just to bring home clean water to the family. And it's often in dirty gasoline containers, and even that water is not clean, and they still have, they're bringing in exposures to bacterial and parasites. Think of just being a new mama. You can't keep your newborn clean without water. You can't keep them free from an infection. And you, 1 in 5 newborn infants will die their first month from lack of water.
Wow. Worldwide.
And so this is a known problem, a known tragedy. What can be done, and what is being done worldwide? We're out there in the world now talking about, and as you said, we're very fortunate to have access to good water here, and we'll talk about that more. But out there in the world, this tragedy, what is being done?
I think it's probably one of the biggest problems that we face in humanity, and I see so many amazing organizations reaching out and doing things even on a local level, but even there are big groups and big nonprofits really attacking this. In the last 10 years, it's been estimated that over 1 million people now have, or more than 1 million people have now access to clean water through either wells or filtration systems. But still, we have a long way to go. And I think a big piece of this is educating ourselves. And I'll tell you, we don't realize that until you see it, right, Jeannie? You see when you go to a place that has no access to water, it's the basis of everything. How could I treat an ear infection when they're malnourished because there's just no clean water and there's just this cyclical diarrhea and infection present? So really, water, it just becomes really the foundation to health.
Nicole and I have had the privilege of going to the same place in Ethiopia to help at an orphanage called Yurati's Village. And I remember being quite impacted by just driving there, seeing the number of women who were carrying large cans of water. And then there were a lot of donkey carts with water. But it was clearly, it's not like you go turn the tap on in a lot of those places. And when you have to haul every drop of water, I've done that in North Idaho for brief periods of time, having to haul my own water. And I always appreciate it now when I turn the tap and there's clean water to be had.
And this just perpetuates a cycle of poverty. When children are constantly having to go and worry about their intake of water for that day, they're not focusing on their schoolwork. And so when they're not focusing on their schoolwork and they're not able to go to school and they're home and just doing these chores and the basic necessities, fighting for that basic right of clean water, they then aren't becoming educated, and this cycle of poverty just continues and perpetuates.
And here we are swimming in water that I would probably drink if I was really thirsty, straight out of the lake.
Right.
Well, it's good that it's recognized that it is a problem around the world. And I know that, as you said, there's great efforts being put forth, but much more needs to be done to help the access to good, clean water in mm-hmm. other places. But compared to most of the world, it seems we're fortunate to have the water resources we have here in North Idaho. And Nicole, do you think it's important that our water resources here be regulated and protected. And let's just put that out a little further around the world.
Susie, I absolutely believe that water should be regulated, and this is my personal opinion, but I also believe that the Clean Water Act and the EPA really needs to have stringent control and regulate this because, like we just talked about, water is the foundation of life and protects our basic human need, and it's vital to our health. So if we do not protect the streams, the lakes, the water that we all need to live off of, we're only harming ourselves. I also think on an economic standpoint, clean water benefits our economy. It benefits agriculture, and farms thrive off of clean water that needs to feed crops and soils. We need to have a sustainable solution to water. In light of the recent forest fires just hitting us here at home, we are seeing the effects of climate change and seeing what happens in times of immense drought, all the more reason to protect the drinking sources of water that we have.
So often, because we are surrounded by water and it is clean, relatively clean, yes, and drinkable and suitable for human consumption, we don't realize how important it is and how valuable it is to have this. So having protections and regulations. Years ago when I lived in Iowa, one of the towns, no one could drink the water because it had been polluted so much from agricultural right into their aquifer. It was done. And they couldn't get it back. So taking care of it and protecting before something goes wrong is a smart thing to do.
And I know that boaters and other people complain about the milfoil in the lake, and a lot of that is contributed from the nitrates in the fertilizers, and it's in the lawn care that we are doing on the lakes, and really just thinking about all layers of impact of clean water, even on our recreation opportunities. But really the foundation of it is essential for our health. So absolutely, I believe that it should be regulated.
Well, it's a beginning starting point of understanding water, and water is life. I know that when they send a space probe out to other planets, the first thing and the only thing they're really looking for is their water, because water is life, and without it, it doesn't happen. And as you said, a certain amount of water is needed for health. Thank you, Nicole, for sharing information about water with us, and from the medical standpoint and global issue that we're looking at.
Thank you, ladies. It's a privilege and an honor to be with you.
And we just heard a recorded interview recorded last week with healthcare practitioner Nicole Grimm.
I learned a lot.
That was really interesting. We learned a little bit more about the importance of clean, drinkable water for health and how it's not everywhere in the planet.
No, and I have that experience that I had in Ethiopia was one of the defining experiences of my life that has made me appreciate so much. That's very basic, having clean water.
It's just like when we had all the smoke for 2 weeks and now we have clean air, how we recognize that clean air. Well, here in North Idaho, we have a big, huge, gigantic, beautiful lake full of clean water, basically.
We want to keep that way.
Yeah, that's what part of the reason we're doing this series.
The other thing about the smoke that I was thinking of as Nicole was talking was the advice that I read about when we did have the smoke, about increasing your water intake, because the water helps your body flush that stuff out. And I did it, and I think it helped.
Kind of moisturizes your lungs and your bronchial area and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I just want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. This is listener-supported community radio for North Idaho, and you're listening to The Morning Show, our special, Jean Girth and Susie Prez, your host for this series, Water is Life. We're listening to the first edition.
So now let's take a look at the City of Sandpoint Public Works Department. The water standards that they meet, the processes that that the water goes through to get to people's homes in Sandpoint. Where does that water come from? How is it treated? And so we're going to start with our interview. We introduce them on the interview, don't we? Now we have joining with us today Amanda Wilson, the Director of Public Works for the City of Sandpoint, and Jeff Cowley, City of Sandpoint Water Wastewater Superintendent. So thank you for joining us and being a contributor to the four-part series Water is Life that we're running, hosted on the morning show Wednesdays at 8 a.m. on 88.5 KRFY. With the interview this morning, we'll be taking a look at local domestic water sources, processing, delivery, use, and management. So let's start at the beginning. Where does the water delivered to Sandpoint residents come from?
Well, thank you very much for having us here today. We're really excited to be a part of this conversation. So in Sandpoint, we are very fortunate. We actually have two sources of water, one of which is the Lake Ponderay. And essentially, large pumps pull water from near the bottom of the lake at approximately 600 feet offshore, and then it delivers the water to our lake treatment plant located just north of the Seasons and kind of north of the Amtrak there. So the second source of water is the Little Sand Creek, which is located within the Little Sand Creek watershed. And that water flows through the creek and by gravity to our Sand Creek treatment plant. And that treatment plant is located off of the Schweitzer Mountain Road.
And how does it get to where it's going?
It's such a great question. So from the treatment plants, kind of starting at your home, most residents have a 3/4-inch service line that connects their house to water mains. And those are water transmission mains. We at the city have about 97 miles of water transmission mains that feed water to the home. So to get to the main, water, at times, it'll flow from one or both of the treatment plants directly to the mains and to the home. At other times, water flows from both or one of the treatment plants into large storage reservoirs. And then from the reservoirs, it goes to the homes. And so we actually, in this area, have two reservoirs, one of which is a 1.7 million gallon reservoir, and that's located up in Syringa Heights. And the other is a 2 million gallon reservoir that's located off of Woodland Drive.
What are the contaminants that are treated to make water safe for drinking? I assume we have pretty clean water coming out of the Little Sand Creek and out of the lake, but I'm guessing it still needs to be treated.
Yeah, we have excellent sources of water. Both sources, Little Sand Creek and the lake, are great sources of water. Our main concern, since we don't have to do any special treatment for contaminants, is suspended matter, dirt in the water, and then disinfecting the water to neutralize any disease-causing organisms. Those are our two main concerns.
So what's used to disinfect it? Is that chlorine added to the system?
Yeah, we use a liquid chlorine at the lake plant and a gaseous chlorine at the Sand Creek plant.
Uh-huh. And then we also have really kind of robust filtration system.
Yeah.
That's pretty fascinating to see, actually.
And those are the water treatment plants that you mentioned?
Yep.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Little Sand Creek or Sand Creek plant is kind of old school technology. Multi-membrane, or not membrane, multimedia filters. There's like a carbon and then a sand. And then the lake plant's state-of-the-art membrane filtration.
And that's more than carbon and...
It's an actual, it's almost like a tiny straw that has little holes in it. And we push water, and for the most part, the water goes through and the dirt and the other contaminants stay on the outside.
It's like a physical filtration.
Yep.
It's, mm-hmm. It's really neat.
So physical filtration and then chlorine added. So I assume that there's still things left in the water after that that are natural, that are okay to drink. We're not drinking distilled water. Are there other things left?
There are. There are still contaminants in water unless it's been treated through a reverse osmosis process or the distillation that you mentioned. And so, all contaminants are regulated by standards. And the standards that we have to apply and comply with, I should say, are really the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act. They regulate all acceptable contaminants within drinking water. And so the act is administered by the Environmental Protection Agency. And really, they're responsible for the national, they call it the National Primary Drinking Water Regulations. So those regulations are really where we get our treatment techniques, And it's not just us, it's applicable to the entire nation so that we have consistency in water standards. And those standards really help, monitor the levels of contaminants that are in the drinking water. So, for example, turbidity, which is measured by the amount of suspended matter, they say that 95% of everything that we sample has to be under what's known as 0.3 units. And just to kind of put that in some terms, the Lake Creek, or the Sand Creek plant, I'm sorry, averages around 0.04 units, and the Lake plant averages around 0.02 units. So that was a lot of numbers, but essentially what we're saying there is that both of our plants in Sandpoint are around 10 times cleaner than what's required by the EPA.
Wow.
For turbidity. Mm-hmm. So that's, to Jeff's point earlier, we're really fortunate here. And, I would say that for listeners, if you're interested in a full list of contaminants and those allowable limits, the EPA has some great resources out there. If you go to epa.gov, their website has a wealth of information about all the potential organisms and microorganisms that might be in there and various other factors that we have to take into consideration.
I noticed on your website that there was quite a bit of information, too. The city of Sandpoint under, I forget the category, it was public utilities, water?
Yeah, public works, exactly.
And so, you have reports that are published about the purity of the water here?
Exactly. I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, Jeff, but I believe every municipality that treats water and provides drinking water has to produce what's known as a consumer confidence report. So every year, Jeff actually produces that report, and it is published on our website. Mm-hmm. If you have anything to add to that, Jeff?
No, multiple, probably going back 10 years is available there. And it is interesting that if you go to another city or you're thinking of moving to another city, you can look up their consumer confidence report too and look up their water quality data.
One thing I just wanted to back up and get a little more background information. You said that the Sand Creek main and the Lake Pend'Oreille main are the two sources. Is that how you describe those?
We have the two plants.
What makes one be used over the other? When do you switch back and forth, and how do you know that?
Prior to 2012, the old lake plant was only used when it had to be used. In 2012, we built the new lake plant. The membranes have to be kept wet, so they can only be off for 24 hours at a time. So that means that plant has to run, multiple times per week. And so the Sand Creek plant, we try and keep running continuously at certain levels, as much as we can through there, just because it is less expensive to make the water there. But then we run the lake plant because we have to. So in the olden days, 90% of the water came from the Little Sand Creek plant. Now we're about 50-50.
And then by using both of them back and forth kind of as you need to because of that 24-hour system, then you're just filling up the reservoirs.
It can either go, if we're making less than the system demands, then the tanks are going down and everything's going to the houses. If we're making more than the system demands, then the tanks can be filling up and we got a surplus.
Very technical. Thank you for that answer.
And the reservoirs are actually tanks. They're enclosed.
Steel tanks. Yep.
So once you treat the water, it goes into these tanks and it's kept clean.
Right. It's just for storage.
Uh-huh.
Is it gravity flow then to the houses?
Yes.
Okay. Because they're up
from
higher.
From the tanks, yep.
One at Syringa, and where is the second one?
It's on Woodland Drive.
Okay, up by the trail up there.
Correct.
And the water treatment plant for the lake is the one that's at the start of the Lake Pend'Oreille Trail?
Yes.
If you drive past the Edgewater and Trinity and the Seasons?
Correct.
Another thing I wanted to kind of touch on, we're talking about quality and standards, EPA standards, but then there's taste. And a lot of people say you'll go somewhere to a town and, the taste of this water is so good. How would you categorize or describe how people feel about the taste of the water here in Sandpoint?
I think it's an excellent quality. And one thing I do when I stay in a motel someplace or a hotel, I test the water first just to see how it tastes. And this water in Sandpoint is, it's among, you know, the best in the country. I'd put it up against just about anybody's.
And Jeff, didn't you say in the, you mentioned to me that we have a level 4, which is really the highest level of
complexity, water, yeah,
for the water system. Quality that we can have. Yep. I guess I would only add, as far as the taste goes, is I've lived a variety of locations across the country. And from my perspective and my taste buds, I think we have excellent water here. I also can say, though, that for some folks who are used to well water, that are, you know, not receiving any chemical treatments, even the faintest amount of chlorine, people can, you know, sometimes taste that. However, there's other communities that have a lot more chlorine, and you can taste that compared to what we have here. So
they're having to put more chlorine in because they have more contaminants to treat.
You're required to keep a residual of chlorine in the system just to make the water safe to drink. That ensures that nothing's growing in the system. Mm-hmm. So we try and keep 0.3 milligrams per liter to 1 milligram per liter of chlorine in the system. And you want it to at least have a small amount at the farthest reaches of the system, mm-hmm. so that everyone's safe to drink the water.
And temperature seems to sometimes impact our taste here.
Yeah.
So we have great water. We have, it sounds like, good federal standards that ensure that any municipality you go to in this country should be up to that level, and we exceed that level. Are there threats to the two sources of water here?
For the Little Sand Creek watershed, our biggest threat by far would be fire, and that would definitely cause some erosion, much more dirt and sediment going into the water. It's not a huge concern, but it is a concern because of the road going up through the watershed. The Schweitzer Mountain Road does go up through the watershed. For the Lake Pend'Oreille watershed, it covers, you know, a huge area. The Clark Fork goes a long way, and just as you get more and more people discharging into the rivers and the different rivers and lakes and the waters, it's just a concern that there's a buildup of contaminants.
So the threat of fire to the Little Sand Creek watershed, is that because, what I've been reading about fires lately is that most of them are human caused. And so I guess with the road up there and people going by, it's just more potential for fire to happen up there.
Yeah, we do have a little area cleared off the road so that, you know, kind of a fire protection area off the road so that it's less of a chance. And for the most part, the watershed is close to recreation. We do allow a little bit of bike trails through there.
But I think from a fire perspective, the other aspect is obviously also natural fires, right? Things that are, you know, coming from either lightning strikes and other causes that might just spread to our area.
Sure,
that,
yeah, it's,
you know,
it happens.
Exactly.
Jeff, you mentioned that in the lake, the potential for polluting the water source, the good drinking water source, is human use, putting stuff into the water. How much does the city have to say about that potential contamination source?
We don't have a say in lands that we don't own or that are within city limits, but we can point out our concerns to other organizations and they can, you know, investigate those concerns.
And you mentioned human, but what are some of those concerns? Is it fertilizer on the shoreline, things like that?
It's more of just every human activity causes a little bit of contamination of the water. So it's just, yeah, the general buildup of multiple sources.
Could be boating. It could be
sure.
All kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the lake is so huge and the Clark Fork River is large that it can assimilate, you know, some contamination. It's just when you keep adding and adding onto it, there's going to be a point where it's going to be a concern.
Dilution's the solution to pollution.
That was the old one in the 50s and the 60s. Yep.
Yeah. I just want to make sure to get to some of these other questions. Of who pays for water treatment? Where does the money come to run all of these fancy treatment plants and pay for our knowledgeable staff?
It's a great question. And there's a lot of infrastructure beyond even just the water treatment plants. We have a like we mentioned earlier, about 97 miles of transmission mains, and they're frankly aging. So there is a significant cost there. And it's not from taxes. That's sometimes a misperception. It's solely from ratepayers. And so we serve water not only to the citizens of Sandpoint, but also to Ponderay, to Kootenai. We sell water at wholesale rates to locations like Syringa Heights and to Northview. So all of those users pay for the system, pay for our time, the administration that goes into that, the operating, the maintenance, the replacement costs. Those are all a result and covered by ratepayers.
So this is a pay-as-you-go system.
It's not subsidized.
It's just if you.
That's correct.
And in I don't live in town, but I. When you use more water, you pay more money.
Absolutely.
Because it's metered.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just on that same question, in Sandpoint, do you have an idea of what the average household uses? Obviously, there's could be 10 people in a household or two people, but maybe per person that actually uses water in Sandpoint.
Sandpoint, I know what comes to the wastewater plant average per year is like 143 gallons per person, but that also includes our INI problem. So it'd probably be closer to 90 to 100 gallons per person per day.
And that can be that sounds kind of low compared to the national average. Do you ever consider, what is it called, where you start conserving water and you put a limit to how much people can use? And what would cause that to come to play?
We're lucky we've got plenty of capacity where we don't have to even, you know, that's not even a concern for us. And if you drive around Sandpoint, you notice there aren't a whole lot of green lawns. There's a few, but most people just let it go natural.
And I think that's more and more because I just water my vegetables, but if I was to water my yard, the price would go up. Mm-hmm. I would be paying
Definitely.
For it.
Yep.
Right.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, conservation is when it comes to water use is always important, whether it's enforced by a jurisdiction or not. It's, you know, a good practice because it is a natural resource and it is a cost as well. So.
And it does take energy and resources to process all of that water and get it to the homes. And I think we do take it for granted.
We do. Yep.
Around here in particular. But I think most people in this country take for granted that you can turn on a tap and have drinkable water, which is really amazing. Here's another question. Does the city have a role in protecting the Little Sand Creek watershed?
We do. And I'm really glad that you asked that question. We actually own about 53% of the watershed. And as Jeff mentioned earlier, we have a legal authority to protect the land that we own. We don't for the land that we don't own. However, we have agreements in place with majority of the adjacent landowners to help ensure that water quality is a priority as we move forward with making decisions. And I think something that's really exciting for us is a community is that this is actually our 100-year anniversary of our watershed, which is really special because not a lot of municipalities actually own the property in their watershed. And so that's something that we are looking forward to celebrating this year. So I, you know, ask listeners to, you know, please keep your eye out for more details on potential festivities coming this fall because we're really excited about it and, you know, want to celebrate the fact that we have such a great resource here. And then also another thing that I would add with that is that this coming year in 2019, we're going to be moving forward with updating our watershed master plan. And the reason for that is we really need a comprehensive plan that captures balancing the variety of uses in that area, whether that's recreation, you know, the water quality aspects and best management practices and also the timber management, because we care very much about protecting our watershed. But we also recognize the value in all the variety of activities that concur in that location. So
it is a multi-use.
It is, yes, and it's something we're grateful for. So I think having that master plan updated will kind of give us a more long-term vision there. So,
and would that then include plans for updating infrastructure as you see it aging? You mentioned that there is a aging problem with aging water pipes.
You're spot on. We do need to also update, and we have plans for doing that in year 2019 as well, our water master plan. So we'll have a watershed master plan, and it sounds like a lot of plans, but the water master plan is really where we highlight our infrastructure needs and what sort of maintenance and replacement costs and projects are associated with that.
Well, thank you so much for coming and telling us about this, and it makes me feel good to see such professionals in charge of our water in Sandpoint. So this was Amanda Wilson, the Director of Public Works for the City of Sandpoint, and Jeff Cowley, City of Sandpoint Water Wastewater Superintendent. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
We're back live in the studio at 88.5, and this is Jean Girth with co-host Susie Prez on our series on Water is Life. I listened again to that interview. I am so impressed with everybody that we interviewed for this series. And I was, you know, you always learn something in this. And to learn that Sandpoint's water is much cleaner than standards just makes me feel good about living here.
I was really happy to hear that they test the water coming out of the treatment plant 24/7. It's constantly tested. You know, in some places they test it occasionally, maybe 3 or 4 times a day. Mm-hmm. But this is a constant test, which really is a good thing.
And if you want to find out more about this, they have a great website. The easiest way I can tell you to find it is to Google City of Sandpoint Water Department. And there's a lot of information there. There's also a way to get involved, I think, with the confidence reports. There is a way for public involvement in this whole water in Sandpoint. So the easiest way is probably to call them and ask. I can't tell you where it is on the web.
It is a little bit hard to get there, but they do have a report that they are required to put out once a year. It's called the Consumer Confidence Report. And it's lengthy, but it was interesting to read in our research here. I was impressed that this Public Works Department and our Water Department really take this seriously. And in the discussion we had with them, they really commented a couple times about how clean our water is. It's not the case everywhere.
No.
But
no.
We have good water to begin with, and it's very well treated. So,
and we will continue to talk about water in the next 3 weeks. So join us again next Wednesday, September 5th, for the second part of this 4-part series, Water is Life. In week two...
Yep. In week two, we will be taking a look at the environment, nature, and water and how they work together. The water cycle that brings rain, floods, and droughts. We will also take a look at the Lake Pend'Oreille watershed. Where does this water come from and how did it get here originally? We will present an interview with Dr. Tony Lewis and geologist Dean Garwood, experts on the Great Flood and glacial Lake Missoula, and they are also members of the local chapter of the Ice Age Flood Institute.
And our second interview will be with Robin Fox from the National Weather Service in Spokane. She'll talk about the water cycle and how weather influences the water sources around here and around the world. So thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us next week for part two of Water is Life.
And that's the end of our public series here this morning, but we're not done talking to you about what's going on here at KRFY.
Susie, what's going on?
Okay, coming up tomorrow, we have two really exciting interviews on the morning show. Jack Peterson and Jim Healy, the hosts of the Thursday morning show, that's August 30th. Their guests will be KRFY broadcaster, new broadcaster, Ryan Baumgartner, who will talk about his new show, 3 o'clock Rush. And Gene, did you have a chance to meet Ryan?
Yes, he's great. It gives me confidence in the next generation.
Yep, he has come to us with an idea. He's a high school senior.